Hey everyone, Brian from All Day Ruckoff here, and today's interview is with Paige Bowie about her GORUCK selection finish. If you don't know, Paige completed GORUCK selection class 3 and is, so far as of recording this, the only female to have completed GORUCK selection. I'm really excited that I was able to grab time on our calendar for us to have this conversation. We talk about her first event, how she got involved with rucking with GORUCK, why she signed up for selection. We get into the selection event and then a little bit of what she's been doing since. As we get closer to the start of GORUCK Selection 2019, that event starts in just 2 weeks on October 17th, 2019. I'm excited to bring more history around the event to the podcast. It's fun kind of taking a break every year to talk about things that have happened in the past. And in this one, I mean, we're diving back into, I believe, 2013 to talk about Paige's GORUCK selection finish. Again, Paige, thank you so much for joining me on this call. I truly appreciate it. And you're listening to the All Day Ruckoff podcast, episode number 121. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. Thank you so much for all of the incredible support. I truly appreciate it. And I really hope you enjoy this interview with Paige.
Did you do an event before you took part in selection?
Yes, I did a challenge. That's what it's called at the time. I did one of those in 2012. One of the early ones in San Francisco, like class 37 or something. I should know the number. The NorCal group would shame me for not knowing which one it is. But yeah, I did it because a coworker, you know, had heard about it and told me about it, and we both signed up to do the challenge.
That's fun. So coworker finds out about GORUCK, tells you about it.
Pretty much. He's a former Marine, and you know, he had talked about it, and I was like, oh, that sounds fun. And there was actually another firefighter in there from like San Jose, another woman. You know, that it's so funny what GORUCK is now and what it was then, the difference. No one knew what to expect at all. And that was like, do you remember Joel Gatt back in the day? He was doing like all of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Blame
so
Joel.
I think he was there. you know, and everyone was real nervous. And I'm sure people still are, but there's so much more known about those events now. But
right.
Yeah, it was a great experience. At the time, it was the hardest thing I'd ever done. You know, I remember talking to people, my friends afterwards about it. And I thought it was just going to be a one and done thing, you know. I did this. It was amazing. It was hard and epic, and that was it. And it was, because it was San Francisco, and we got to cover such great ground.
So how did your coworker sell you on the event? Because like you said, back then there was so little known about it. What did they tell you to expect?
You know what? He didn't have to sell me too hard. I'm up for those kind of adventures usually. And I think, or maybe I told him. I should know this better. You know why? Because I remember now I was looking, that's when Tough Mudder was kind of early on too. And I was thinking about signing up for something, and I was researching the Tough Mudder. And then I saw that was really early when they were throwing the GORUCK, the rucksacks literally in the Tough Mudders. And there was a link on the Tough Mudder site.
Yeah, that kicked you over to GORUCK. It was like that sidebar.
That's what started it. And I went down that rabbit hole. I've never done a Tough Mudder, I don't think, since. I've done a bunch of Spartan races, you know, but I left that website and went to GORUCK, and I was like, oh, I'm going to sign up for this. I think simultaneously, my coworker had heard about it as well. That's what it was. So we both ended up doing it.
It's yeah. So funny how many people, you know, in those first days found GORUCK through Tough Mudder.
Was there a lot of people that did that?
I mean, that's how I found it.
I guess, because Tough Mudder was big. Yeah. And I was like, what are they doing? It just sounded intriguing enough. And it was coming to San Francisco, you know. So it gives a good opportunity.
Absolutely. So you signed up for that first event. Your coworker found out about it as well. Mm-hmm. You said it was a great experience. When you finished it, did you think you would do another one ever again?
No. I mean, that was when there was just the challenges, right? And I was like, oh, that was awesome. But I, you know, I don't need to do it again. kind of thing. I wasn't super interested in putting myself through that again. Although I did think, oh, it might be nice to go somewhere else, like different city, and try and do it, because it'd be fun to experience another place.
Yeah, that was about my thought process as well. My first one was in Seattle, and then I was like, I'm probably never doing one of those again. And then it was going to Portland. I was like, oh, well, Portland's a fun city. Maybe I'll do one there.
Yeah. Did you?
I did. It was a lot of fun.
Nice.
So it's always fun. You know, it's a different way of exploring a new city for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, at some point between your first event and selection, I mean, you must have heard about that event. How did that whole process happen?
It happened fairly quickly. So the first selection kicked off, and I didn't really know about it. But then, you know, I looked and saw that only a few people passed. Or no, it was the one that the one in DC where three people passed. So it was the 001, I guess, not the very first one. And I was like, what is this? The pass rate is so, like, that intrigued me right away. I was like, what are they doing? Like, how come only a few people pass this event? And I was reading about it, and this is where my coworker got me. He was like, I'm going to sign up for the selection that's coming to San Francisco. The same guy who we did the challenge together. He'd heard about that, and that's what he had already, like, committed to signing up. And so that definitely piqued my interest, and I did a little more reading about it. And I remember I got my ruck loaded up and went for a hike, and I was like, I'm going to do this event. And that's how it happened. I was like, I'm going to do it. And I signed up, you know, based on just intrigue of the low pass rate and a coworker who was, you know, gearing up to go. And we actually didn't train that much together. He's on a different shift. We trained a couple times together out on the beach. We had a friend put us through PT at night one time out at Ocean Beach in San Francisco. But other than that, we kind of did our own thing and it's almost embarrassing to say this now, because people train for a year or more for selection. And I think I put like 2 or 3 months hardcore focus training in. But I was already in a pretty good, you know, baseline shape, I think, being a firefighter and everything else, that the ramp up wasn't too significant.
Yeah, you weren't going couch or desk job to selection.
Yeah. And so I think that helped a ton, obviously, my background. But that was it. I made the commitment. And it was just game on after that. I'm pretty detail oriented, so I scoured the internet looking. At that point, I started to dig in, you know, and about anything I could find. And there wasn't a whole lot then, because it was still so early, I think, which made it part, you know, only 6 people signed up for our San Francisco, or showed up, let me say that, showed up for the San Francisco one. Maybe because out of fear of the unknown, I don't know. But
And that was back in the day, too, when GoRuck was driving around the country putting on selection events.
Yes. Yeah. So that's why it was, you know, they were in different locations. And that was amazing. I imagine the logistical, I think that's why they stopped. It was so hard logistically for them to put on that kind of event all over the place with the resources they had. So, I mean, they relied a lot on the NorCal group to help them, I remember, you know, for selection.
I believe it, because you really need control of, you know, the whole situation and the whole environment. And it's tough to show up in a city and try and get that if you don't have an established presence.
Yeah, and they didn't have it. They had partly control, but they were definitely negotiating as they went. I remember some of that, you know, and of course they can pull it off with their cadre and who they are. And they're talking to law enforcement and like, hey, this is what we're doing. And usually the cops or whoever it is, park rangers, like, oh, okay, cool. You know, just because, you know, it takes a lot of terrain.
Oh yeah, a lot of ground covered.
Yeah, I know. So it was, you know, offered in the city, and I thought that was great. And it was just a good timing in my life too, where I had the time to put the training in and could go for ruck for, you know, 20 miles during my off days, which was a luxury. You know, I put in all that time to training and stuff.
Yeah, if that's what it sounds like, that it. For a lot of people, it has to really coincide with the ability to put in those kind of miles and those kind of hours. And
yeah, I mean, I don't know how people do it with families and 9-to-5 jobs. And I mean, I had trained previously for a marathon, which I thought was a big commitment, because, you know, several hours of running, and then you get home and you're wiped out. And this was kind of a whole new level of that. You know, it worked out for me at the time, put in that commitment.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
So you had found Selection and you were intrigued by it. They had done the beta down in Jacksonville, and that first class was up in DC, and three people passed. If they hadn't been doing the roadshow, taking it around the country, do you think that you would have traveled for it, or do you think that you would have just probably waited it out or not signed up?
That's a good question. I've never thought of that. I don't know that I would have done it, but it never crossed my mind because I didn't have to.
Yeah, I didn't have to because they were coming to you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Like how it is now. I might have traveled for it if that was, you know, the only location.
It's a lot bigger of a deal now, I feel like. When they were putting it on before, they weren't kind of promoting it as much as they promote it now with all the live coverage. And, the you know, they put together like an hour-long video of two selections ago. And they've just made it there's a lot more media focus behind it, which I think will draw people to travel for it. Where back in the day, I mean, it was, you know, a couple Facebook pictures here and there. And there wasn't even there's no Instagram account. It was...
Yeah, everyone's phone was dying. I remember they said that their phones all died and they couldn't take any more pictures.
Yep.
You know.
I remember there was a class, I think it was maybe in Colorado, where I think it was there were 7 pictures posted total. I mean, it was...
Yeah. Uh-huh, in Boulder, that one.
Yep. And it's a whole different whole different media game now.
For sure. And I don't blame them. I think once it kicked off, there was a lot of intrigue. You know, a lot of people wanted to know what's going on. Maybe partly because they couldn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I had a friend who went out for that beta class, and I remember we were all asking him questions because there were hardly any pictures posted. We were so curious, and there just wasn't the media coverage there is now.
Yeah. Are they still doing? I heard a rumor that they were going to stop Selection.
So there's,
but I haven't confirmed.
There's a Selection next month in October down in, I think, Jax.
Okay.
And then next year there's no Selection on the calendar.
Okay, for 2020.
For 2020. So we'll see what happens. I mean, they're bringing back Team Assessment. They're doing they just added on Friday something called the Rucking World Championship, which has...
I saw that.
I think they're putting up $3,500 cash prize per male, female, and then mixed team finishers first place. So,
oh, wow.
Seems like they're going big on that side of it, the whole competitive rucking.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens.
Okay. It'd be a shame if they stopped Selection, but, you know, I'm sure it's... Maybe it's not worth it. I don't know.
I have a feeling that they'll be bringing it back. That they'll maybe 2020 is just kind of like a wake up call year that they want people to really put in the effort and have more than one finisher. I don't know. It's interesting.
Right. That's tough.
It is.
Just none or one finishers every year is brutal. I went out there a few times to watch more recent classes, and it's funny, every year I get excited and think, oh, there's got to be. And then you look at all the people signed up, and you look at them all, and you're like, oh, yeah, these people are going to pass. And then it's down to 0 or 1 or 2. It's it's demoralizing. I'm like, okay, I don't need to see this anymore. But, I mean, it still draws you in. It's like you can't look away every time Selection goes off. I definitely follow it. So there's something magical to it, but I do, yeah, it'd be nice to see more than one person finish.
Yeah, and it's got to be, I mean, for the participants, it's got to be tough seeing the numbers drop too, because you're looking at all these people who you saw, you're like, man, those people are so strong, and then they're dropping, and then it's just kind of a mind game.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to your Selection class, I mean, you were the only finisher, correct?
Correct.
So there must have been a time where the numbers, you said 6 showed up, it dwindled to 5, 4, 3, 2, and then it's just you left. How did you feel seeing those participants drop off?
You're kind of shocked, really. Every time somebody dropped, with exception of maybe one, I was surprised. Or in the term, the first night we lost 3. And it happens kind of so quickly, and you're in the dark out there. You'd think with only 6 of us, we'd... You know, you notice what happened, but you're so focused on doing the evolution, and you're in the sand, and you're disoriented, and, you know, occasionally they'd have us you know, we'd be running to different objectives, and all of a sudden you come back and there's less people. And, you know, I didn't put too much thought into what happened because it was still working so hard. But I know we lost three the first night. And I was just thinking, wow, that was fast. But it was brutal. There was a part of me that wasn't surprised. Like, if you didn't put the time in, you know, there's no way you're going to make it through that first night. And then that night transitioned into a run where we lost my coworker, who had pre-existing knee injury, I think, coming into selection. I can't believe he started it and made it as far as he did, actually. But the run just kind of murdered him, and we had to immediately put our rucks on and kind of go back down the hill. And he was like, I can't do it. So he stopped then. And that's the one I was like, yeah, you should stop. You're going to hurt yourself, which is what a lot of people get to, right? They get to that point where they're at major injury level or potential. But then it was two of us the whole day rucking with, you know, objects and stuff. I remember it was like kind of brutal and hot, and we didn't have any food, the usual, right? You're just sucking it up and getting through everything. But we took our first meal break late in day two, and that actually hurt me more. Like, I think having food in my stomach and then continuing on, I was hurting. And I thought that the other guy that was still with me was doing better finally. It was kind of, we flip-flopped in terms of how well we were doing, and he looked strong. And I started to feel like, oh, I'm not feeling very good. I just felt myself slow down. And so we finally get to kind of the top of where we're going. And we got to set our objects down and use the bathroom real quick. And I came out, and he was gone. And that was a super surprise to me. You just never expect or know what's going through people's heads. You know, he seemed fine, but I think his feet were really torn up. I learned this later. And he just was, you know, didn't want to push that any more than it was already hurting. He might have had something else going on as well. I can't really remember, but it's just funny. You think people are okay, and then they're done, and vice versa. Sometimes people are hurting and they just keep on going. But yeah, it was all of a sudden there was just me left for 24 hours, and I was shocked that it happened at that point. But I also was a little bit like, well, now there's nobody else for them to compare me to. Like, no more pays to be a winner, just pays to keep going kind of thing, you know, good and bad. All the focus is on you, you know, and they're just going to keep pushing you, but there's nobody else to, you know, do anything competitive, which I think for the cadre kind of sucks. So yeah, it was a trip.
I can imagine. I can see how that would kind of be, as much of a little relief as it can be, because then you don't have anyone else to be compared to, because mm-hmm. it always seems like GoRuck selection is graded on a curve where, you know, there's always going to be an A and there's always going to be an F. And so even if people come in a split second behind it, you know, the person who came in second, you know, they get the extra weight.
Yeah. Right. And it's great when you're the A, right?
Yes.
And you're like, okay, you're like, the focus is on me. It's not on me. I'm doing, you know, you just keep going. Hours are passing. And of course sucks when you're not there. And I think that's also where the mind games really start to pile up, because they just pile it on if you're not, you know, in the top group. And then it's self-fulfilling prophecy kind of thing.
So speaking of those mind games, I mean, how did you stay mentally sharp? Was there anything that you did in training that kind of helped with that? Or do you think it was, you know, kind of your work that might have helped with it?
I think, you know, I think both. I definitely did a lot of training and research in terms of mental preparation. I looked at a lot of SteelFit, you know, that website. And there were a few others out there that talked about the mental side of this sort of thing. And just having like mantras and focusing on your breathing. And for me, I know I have an athletic background as well, and I think that really helped. And I honestly wish I would have known some of this mental training stuff a lot back when I was more playing competitive sports. But, you know, I'd been in those situations before where you have to tune out negative, you know, negative energy, negative talk, whatever it might be, negative circumstances, and just stay focused. And so that having that baseline helped, and then doing the additional training, finding something to focus on other than what they're doing to you, you know. And it was good I had practiced it, because it definitely I don't think I would have made it without that training, and without being able to, you know, focus on my breathing. I can't even remember what my mantras were, you know, something like "you got this" or simple things. Everybody has their own little things. Or even, I know at the long walk, I was counting my steps at the very end, because it was just so brutal. I was so wanting to stop, and I just started counting the steps I was taking just to do something. But, you know, when they were in my face or with the bullhorn, I don't know. I think you have to have a little bit of a contrary attitude, you know, just kind of a little FU mentality, versus, you know, for me, it was like, FU, this is a game and you're not going to break me, you know? Then that's the mentality I had. I think that seems to be the mentality a lot of the finishers have, versus letting in whatever they might be saying. You start to doubt and start to think it might be true. And I've seen that happen to so many people where, you know, they'll find a weakness, you know, especially for women. They'll start hammering, "No woman's done this, and women are too weak, and this is why women shouldn't be here." And then if you really listen to that, you know, your performance is going to suffer. Or, you know, same, they come up with anything they see you do that you might not be good at, they'll just pounce on it, and you can't listen to any of it. And that's, I think, a lot harder for some people than others, especially when you're alone. And that's the other thing. I think a lot of people, that the feedback I got from some of the people that dropped out of my class, realizing they were so used to the team type events, you know, the challenge where you're helping each other and talking to each other and sharing the load. And the fact that they couldn't do that and they couldn't get any support from anybody else, you know, it's brutal. You're just relying on yourself. And I think that comes as a surprise if you're not ready for it. So, you know, there's a lot going into there.
Yeah, there sure is. And I mean, back in 2013 selection, there was only a little bit known and written about it. And I mean, you mentioned that you had done all the research you could, which compared to how much research you can do today is probably very little.
You could probably spend hundreds of hours today.
I mean, there's 20 plus hours worth of video out there per class now that you could just sit and watch and figure, you know, write down what they're doing and then go out and practice it. And so you had mentioned, you know, cadre getting in your, trying to get into your head, and that you kept, you know, telling yourself, you know, this is a game, I'm not going to let you get in there. And so I'm kind of wondering if that lack of knowledge helped with that, because I feel like there's just so much information out there now that you can just start drowning in it and take it too seriously.
That's a good point. I think there is such a state of too much information. I think it really depends on knowing your own personality and what works for you. There's a fine line between, you know, preparing as much as possible, taking out all those variables that you can control for, and then having the other side, which is, I'm going to handle anything they throw at me, and knowing you've prepared, but knowing also, hey, they could throw something I haven't thought about or trained for, and I'm not going to freak out, and I'm going to handle it, you know, and just having that confidence. But I agree with you. I imagine now if you start really looking at everything, you could probably get demoralized or paralyzed, right? Like, I gotta do every type of PT exercise there is and be really good at it, and almost, you know, it'd be overwhelming to train for if you let it get that way. Yeah. I don't know. I was fortunate I didn't have that problem. I think for me, you know, the closest thing is the real thing, right? Real selection or buds, you know, and there's enough information out there, and that's what I was going towards. Like, how these people get through buds, you know, and it's the same tools. And you learn too, that everybody gets through it a little differently. There's stuff in common, but everybody has different things that work for them. You know, and, you have to trust yourself enough to be confident, like, hey, I'm not the strongest person in the world, you know, but I know what my strengths are and how to train for my weaknesses. And, you know, I don't know. I think there's something interesting that in your own abilities at a certain point that you've trained enough, you know, you've taken out the variables that you think are important, and then you just trust in your training and your ability.
That's perfect. And that's so smart.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you could really do back then, is just kind of look at what other, you know, things are there out there like this, and then base training on that. I know for the, I mean, for the first year of the STAR course, I based all of my training on, I just looked at, you know, what do ultra marathoners do? People who run 50 mile races, how do they hydrate and train?
How do they take care of their feet?
So I did all of my training based off 50 mile training plans for running because there wasn't anything out there for rucking that distance.
Did it help?
Yeah, it helped a ton. I think the hydration stuff helped. I mean, especially because I didn't know how my body would handle certain foods after 20 hours of constant movement.
Yeah, there's some stuff you just can't know.
Yeah.
Hope for the best. That's one of them.
Yeah, without a 50-mile training rock, you know, you're not going to know.
Yeah. Which, you know, you don't want to do nowadays anyway, right? The less is more kind of mentality.
Right.
So, yeah. But it's interesting, all the different, and people, you know, I could see why people get overwhelmed, you know, oh, should I do keto diet or, you know, paleo and how should I take care of my feet and all that stuff. There's just a lot to consider.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of resources out there and they all sound so professional.
So. Yeah. And then you go out there and you're like, that never happened to me.
Yeah.
Or something completely different did. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting world to live in now.
How was the STAR course?
It was wonderful. It was a really, really fun event. It reminded me of completing my first challenge. You know, you're training for something, you don't know exactly what it's going to be like, and then you get out there and you're going through things you've never felt before, and you come out the other side, and it was a ton of fun.
Really nice.
So
that's cool. The rucking competition looks intriguing.
It does, doesn't it?
Where you go from point to point, and there might be some surprises. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, it's not just a straight go from here to there.
Yeah.
And the fact that you get to kind of choose the way you're going to navigate. It looks fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got I've got two kids right now, age 2 and 5. Mm. And it was really chuffed finding the time to train for the STAR course and maintain that work/family/everything life balance. But I'm intrigued by that, that DC event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I won't be signing up anytime soon. I actually have twins on the way.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. But I will be, you know, taking an interest while I'm not participating.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely had that time when my 2-year-old was out to when she was born. I was like, all right, events are on the back burner.
Yeah. They take priority.
So for that selection event, was there a time during it that you knew you were going to finish, you were going to come out the other side, or was it just a kind of a question mark up until the very end?
Well, I went in knowing I was going to finish. I had that mentality, like I'm finishing this event, and that was pretty strong all the way through. But I did have some definite doubts at certain points where that dipped a little bit. And I was like, just hang on, you know, you're in those just hang on moments. Let's see. The second night was brutal. I mean, I probably say that a lot. That was where I was by myself and it was, you know, on the beach, just getting, you know, hammered by those guys. And I was just so tired. Like that's when you're just mentally like, I felt myself just losing it a little bit. In terms of coherence and being with it. So I was just like, well, they won't let me die if I could just hang on, you know, and get through this until the sun comes up. You know, and I did, and I hung in there, and that day was rough. Everything takes longer than you think, right? You just keep wanting the hours to pass, but it seems to drag on forever. But I, you know, at that point, you're like, just get to the long walk. I can make it if I get to the long walk. I think that's probably what everybody thinks. They must be. Because, you know, at that point, I just have to walk, right? And then it was so much harder than I thought it would be. That long walk turned into such a mental challenge because it just never ended. It felt that way. And they they actually ramped it up, of course, at the end and had, you know, move faster, you're moving too slow. And I was just like, oh my gosh, are you kidding? Like, there's no way I can move fast. That's what I was thinking. And that's the point where I actually started counting my steps. I was, I think, pretty desperate at that point. Which is funny, right? You're just shuffling along and you're watching these people do selection now and you're like, I can do that. I can just keep walking with the ruck back, you know. But at the time when you're that far in and that thing feels like it weighs a ton, you know, it was just all I could do to keep my feet moving. And that was a low point for sure. And I knew I was close to the end, you know, but it was still a fight to not stop. So that was probably the lowest. And then, you know, as the finally the evening hits, you're like, okay, I have to be getting close. And that helps, you know, seeing the sun start to go down and, you know, then your confidence picks up just a hair, not anywhere to get cocky at all. Cause it's still, you know, there's still always more to come, but, you know, knowing that the clock is getting a little bit closer to that end, somewhere around the end index. The long walk, that really was. Just because, you know, so much time has been put in already and you're that fatigued was probably the low point there where I started to doubt things. But other than that, I was still, you know, it would have been, I might've had to physically had an injury to stop me.
And that's kind of the drive and dedication you need to finish.
Yeah. At that point. And I can see why injuries get so many people. That was the unknown, you know, when is my body going to break down? And, you know, I did have to switch shoes at one point because my left Achilles was really acting up. Like I was feeling it and I was like, oh, this is not good. And I threw on my tennis shoes and I think that saved me, you know, but I didn't anticipate that happening. The shoes were dynamite. They had worked for me all my training, but I never covered that much ground, you know, until the event. And sure enough, something starts to give. So, I could see why certain, you know, people run into those problems with injuries because you don't put yourself through it that far, until the event itself. Yeah. I don't know. I was pretty confident, but it definitely brings you, it brings you as low as it can.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with those bigger events is you never really know what's going to happen to you when you get mm-hmm. past those points.
Yeah, and there's no way to train for those points, I think. It's like those endurance events or people, like the Olympic level marathoners to me are always, or anything where their body must be on the verge of injury the whole time. You know, like it's like that fine line of how fast can I run 26 miles where your body is just, you know, it's just riding that fine line and you see, you know, people go down because they're just pushing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the endurance events, same kind of thing. So some of it's luck, you know, if your body holds up.
Yeah. I mean, there's just some of those things that you can't even train for. No amount of training will save you from. And I mean, there's definitely that luck factor, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yes.
The one no one likes. I mean, you pushed through on that long walk and eventually got to the end. How did it feel finishing?
I was shocked and relieved. Is the biggest feeling I remember having was relief because the exhaustion was just so great that I couldn't, you know, it felt like slow motion, you know, where you're like underwater, like everything just feels slow. I mean, I was relieved. I was happy, but, I remember I couldn't eat very well, you know, it was freezing. I'd like to say it was euphoric, but it was more just like, thank God this is done. And, you know, I was obviously very, very happy. I was stunned because, you know, people had called my family and friends who I had no idea even knew about the event were there. And it was overwhelming. That's I don't have any other words.
Yeah.
Relieved, overwhelming, you know, and I know I had a huge smile on my face. But, you know, it's just, I think, and when people finish events like that, it's almost like you don't think about that part, right? That's the part you don't train for.
Yeah.
They're like, now what? And then you're done. It's, oh my God, I can't believe it. So.
Yeah. You know, the star course is nothing like selection, but I remember thinking about how I would feel at the end of it. Like, yes, completed 50 plus miles. And then when I did get to the end of it, I remember we came in just over 60 miles. I remember just thinking, I'm so glad we're done. I'm so glad we came in under time. Where's my Uber? Get me out of here. I need food.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like you can't enjoy it as much as you think you would.
Yeah, it was the feelings I had were way different than, you know, when you're out there training, you're kind of trying to visualize success and what this is gonna mm-hmm. this whole thing's gonna be like. And then the end was definitely different than what I was thinking.
Yeah. It's interesting. It goes to show we don't do it for the result, right?
Right.
I mean, that's part of it. And that's part of the attitude I had too, is I'm gonna do my best and I'm gonna have fun in a way, right? And know that I've prepared. And this is actually, you know, the process is what it's about, and having that mentality. Because it's true in any big, I feel like any big event in life, you complete it and you're like, yeah. And then it's like, all right, a little bit of a letdown. Like, okay, what's next? Or, you know, you don't really bask in that victory for too long. It's just, it's so funny the way life is. Like you crave the process again. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. it's so bizarre how that works. I mean, it's just human nature for some of us, I guess. You know, you finish the event, you're like, I did it. And then a day later, 2 days later, you're already looking for the next thing.
Yep. Yeah. And you start glamorizing, like, oh, it was so fun. And you forget all the brutal parts.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure you've laughed more during this call than you probably did the entire 48 plus hour event.
Oh, so. Yes. Yeah. It's easy to look back and kind of gloss over, you know, the, I mean, I look at it in like any challenging thing. There's something to it. There's something to, I think, doing something that's hard work and very worthwhile and really makes you stretch yourself. That whole process is what, you know, gets us addicted to it. It's not the victory at the end. It's the, you know, the learning about yourself in the process, even though you're so focused on the end goal, you know? But yeah, I wasn't laughing during the event at all. but you know, you look back, you're like, okay. And it does. And that's part of the beauty of it too, right? Like, you know, it gives you that confidence. Like, okay, I passed selection. That's pretty cool. There's not a lot people can throw at me now. You know, and that gives you that baseline for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
With hard events.
Yeah.
Like, you know, oh, I'm going to miss dinner tonight. That's not the end of the world. Right?
Yeah.
I've been hungry before.
You've proved it. You've missed dinner a couple nights in a row.
Yeah. Survived that. And you live. Yeah. Right? Good perspective. So
we kind of touched on that whole what's next personality. When you finished selection, were you thinking, you know, what's next? Was there something next to sign up for?
Let's see. You know what I ended up doing was Endeavor.
Oh, Endeavor Team Challenge.
Yes, which I absolutely loved. I've done it. I did it twice. Maybe not the first year, but probably year two, and then maybe the following year after that. And that was kind of my what's next. It wasn't planned at the time, but when I started to search for other things. And I did some other co-work events back, you know, they had Navigator and Trek, maybe. What were those? You know, those.
Yes.
I can't remember what they called them at the time.
The Capstones.
Thank you. The one in Vegas where, you know, I think that was Trek. the secretive one.
That was Trek.
Yeah. Did you do one of those?
Unfortunately, no.
No. Okay. It's too bad too. I think it was probably cost them so much money, but it was like, I had a lot of fun, and those to me were fun events. You know, the navigating stuff was great. Like learning all those skills, a lot of them I had, but just building on them. And then Endeavor was just amazing, where you put a lot of that together with the rucking, the running, the navigating obstacle courses. Like it just sounded like fun. And so that was kind of what I ended up doing after that. And then I traveled, like I said, back to watch a couple selections in Jacksonville, which kind of just drew me in like moth to the flame, like I said. And then I kind of at the end, every time I'm like, oh man, only one person passed. Like, but you still go back for the camaraderie and, you know, see everybody and it's fun.
And it kind of seems like selections turned into a reunion of sorts for selection finishers. You see a lot of them
yes.
hanging out.
Yeah. it's great. However many people can make it, and you know, Jason opens the doors for everybody, and you get to hang out and talk to people, and it's fun. So, and Shadow and all that good stuff. And I enjoyed that, the couple times I did it.
So knowing what you know now about selection and everything that goes on with that event, if you were presented with all this knowledge back in 2013, do you think you still would have signed up for it?
I think so. I don't think that would have like scared me off. I think I would have found it useful because I think I can draw the line between, you know, taking it all in and then devising my own plan. Yeah, I think I still would have signed up, but just because the pass rate's still so low. That was the initial thing that got me. You know, it was like, what are they doing that not this? Like, I can do this. You know, I want to see if I can do this. You know, you want to challenge yourself, and that challenge is definitely still there. If anything, that's gotten harder, right?
Sure has. It sure is still there.
So, you know, back where I was mentally in 2013, if that was the case and there was all this information, I think I would have liked to have that information. I would have, you know, used it, I think. Because I still think part of the challenge for people to this day, you see so many people sign up, but I question how many really go out and train with the knowledge they have. Because it's one thing to read about it, and then it really is. I mean, I had a hard time. Like, you don't want to put yourself out there at 9 o'clock on a Friday night when, you know, we're all adults now.
Yeah.
In the beach and train. And so it's actually a lot harder than you think it might be. So if you take all that information and you put yourself through the paces, you know, I think that knowledge can be very, very useful. So, you know, I think that's part of the why it's still so hard is because it's just hard to put yourself out there and train in that and under those conditions.
Yeah. And with all of that live coverage, I mean, you could sift through it. You could write down everything that they're doing. You could turn them all into workouts, and it's all about doing it.
Yep. It's all about doing it. I agree. I think, and I mean, it's interesting to see the different finishers and their mentalities or what they did to train, you know, and they've all done different stuff. So it just goes to show you can create your own plan.
Yeah. It's been interesting doing all these interviews, talking to so many selection finishers because
how many have you talked to quite a few?
I think 5 so far. I'll have to, to double check, but
any of the more recent finishers?
Yes, I've talked to, so I've been talking to all of the most recent finishers, and then I'm trying to go back in time, so to speak, and gather up everyone. So
yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Well, yeah, well, I'm sure you probably, I don't know, maybe you can verify what some of the stuff I've just said, if people have had different training plans or back, you know, their backgrounds that allowed them to do the training for this, but.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's all the training plans have been different. All the backgrounds have been different. It's just that, you know, just the mental state of mind and the way that people kind of tackle challenges and get drawn to the event, like you said, as a way to, you know, test themselves in the process and not really the goal or the end result with the being the focus is. Because everyone I've talked to has gone on. There's been multiple selection finishers who have gone on to do Endeavor, and it seems like for the people who finish selection, it's just kind of a step along the way in the journey and not the ultimate end goal, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Endeavor. Chris Way turned me on to Endeavor, and then what's the other one? So then there's some. You know, Olaf is just insane. The events he's done. He's another planet. He really is.
Yeah. Yeah, his quintuple people, Iron Man. I mean,
yes.
No.
I was just like, who else? Has anyone in the group done like, well, they did back when Spartan was doing those, I can't remember what they were called.
Death Race, right?
Thank you. Yeah. A lot of them did the Death Race. There we go. Death Race. I don't think anyone did Barclays, did they?
I got
people
tried
talked about it. Who did?
Didn't Gat.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're right. He did. He did back then. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's funny that, you know, there's definitely the draw to these, you know, long, hard endurance events.
Yeah.
I think I'm on the low end of the spectrum, really, compared to a lot of these people. Endeavors and Selection are the longest, you know, which compared to some of these other ones. But, you know, it's funny that it's interesting, the spectrum.
It is. It is. And it's, I mean, if I looked at Selection, which I haven't, it's kind of like that top rung or the top thing in the ladder. And I, like I said, I feel like for a lot of people who have finished Selection, it's just, you know, one more handle along the way to whatever's next.
Yeah. Maybe that helps too with the finishing, right? Because you're not looking at it that way.
Yeah. It's not the pinnacle, the crown jewel. It's just one more event in the list of events, and there'll be more in the future, and there are more in the past, and
interesting
mindset.
I give so much credit to the people who've done it, who failed and then came back and passed. That seems incredibly difficult. In a way, good, because you've got the experience, but also just to put yourself through that mentally again and again. Stoney's the one I'm thinking of right now, you know.
Yeah.
So much credit to him for nailing it. That must have been so... We're all happy to finish Selection, but I imagine, you know, when you've tried and failed and then you do it, it's like, wow, like, good for him.
Yeah, and you kind of have an idea of what your body's going to go through during it, depending on how far you got, and you know you have to prep for that again.
Yeah, exactly. The knowing part, yeah, and like you said, like, you know, is it better to not know? And, you know, I kind of think it is. Like, if I had to do that again, I'd be like, oh, wow, that's a whole different mental challenge.
So kind of speaking on that, on knowing what your body's going to go through, and how was the recovery for you for that event?
The recovery was a little harder than I thought it would be. I think I actually tried to go to work the next day. I'm like, I'm fine.
We've mentioned a couple of times, it's not like you have a desk job where you just have to throw yourself into a chair and then you're set for 8 hours. It's a...
Yeah. So I'm a firefighter and, well, was a firefighter. I'm battalion chief now, but, you know, and I went to work and that left Achilles was actually a lot worse than I thought it was. And I couldn't get my foot into my turnout boot, like, without tons of pain. And I remember my captain at the time, he's like, yeah, you're going to go home. But that's me, you know, I was like, I'll be fine. You know, but I did have to recover, that I didn't tear it or anything, but I had strained it, where I was on the border. If I had pushed it any further, you know, they said I was at risk for an Achilles injury, which would have been horrible. As you know, those injuries are bad, but, you know, I rested, so I couldn't run, I think, for maybe a month or two after that. I had to heal that thing up and do some PT. I was able to go back to work, but that was kind of my lingering thing. And it's still funny, even to this day, occasionally, if I push myself a little too far, I can start to feel just, you know, the whisper of it coming back. Those injuries never quite go all the way away. But you know, that was really it. My feet were pretty much okay. It was just that Achilles injury and the fatigue. It was a weird fatigue thing where you're so exhausted, but you couldn't sleep. But that, you know, that recovers in a few days, but it was weird because you think you'd just sleep for, you know, 2 days straight, but that doesn't happen either. So, but, yeah, I don't know.
I can only imagine how weird that feeling must be, because you know you need sleep and you know you should be sleeping, but you're not.
Yeah, you're just laying there. I think maybe part of that's mental too. I don't know. It's interesting. I'd be curious to know about the other Selection finishers. It was almost, and this has happened with other projects in life, you know, big goals that you have that you achieve and you're done. And we kind of touched on it earlier, but the mental side of that, it's almost a letdown. You know, like almost a mini depression, like the having that goal or something to train for. Maybe that's why we always look to the next thing. It's just an interest. I find myself very just intrigued by it now at this point, and I know it's coming. Like, and because you dive into stuff, you work so hard, you're studying, you're training, you finish, And you, all you wanted while you were studying and training is to be done, right? Like, oh, I want to go to Hawaii and spend a day on the beach or whatever, you know, like, I can't wait to be done with this. And then you're done and you're like, okay, now I'm a little sad or bored or whatever, you know, not to that extreme, but you notice it and you're just like, we're so funny as humans. Like, you know, can't wait to be done. And then you're done and it's not what you thought it would be. And that's why I think it's like, it's just really, it must be about the process and just being able to enjoy being in it, right? Being in the craziness where you're not sure if you're going to, you know, train well enough and all that comes with it is where it's at. And so I've kind of learned that over the years because it's like, it's almost predictable.
It is. And that's really insightful. And that's one of the things that you can only learn with years of experience and with doing a number of events where you've had to train up for it, where you start seeing that pattern every time.
Well, and then you start to enjoy the chaos, right? I imagine it's that way with raising kids, right? Just it's there's chaotic times and, you know, you're kind of frazzled and whatever, but it's like, okay, this is actually the moment that I need to be paying attention to, not getting through it.
Yes.
You know? Just, and that's, yeah, you're right. It comes with time and experience and doing hard stuff in life.
Yeah, that definitely helps. I appreciate you taking all this time. Is there anything else that you want to talk about? You know, anything that you want to bring up, to mention that we might have missed or anything that you want to say?
Thank you for having me. Thank you for, I'm definitely going to follow this upcoming selection. Looking forward to that as always, but, appreciate it. Appreciate what you're doing with the Ruck Off. I was looking it up after you made contact. So it's really cool. I was like, there's some good information on here, you know, cause I get interested and like, I'm like, should I ever buy the boots? And you know,
yeah.
I was looking at what you said. I was like, oh, this is good info.
I never know if I'm helping or hurting with information overload, but.
No, I think it's good.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Ruck Off podcast. This has been episode number 121. Truly appreciate the support. I really hope you enjoyed this interview with Paige. I had, again, just a ton of fun talking with her. She was so nice and gracious on the phone for giving me all that time and for talking about an event that it's been roughly 6 years since she completed. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to support the All Day Ruck Off podcast, you can leave a review on either Apple Podcasts or on our Facebook page. Just search for All Day Ruck Off. You can purchase things in the All Day Ruck Off online store, alldayruckoff.com/store, or you can support through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayruckoff. And there's links in the show notes to that as well. In this episode, I want to give a huge thank you to Peter for supporting through Patreon. Truly appreciate that support and thank you. If you want to get links to anything that we talked about during this episode, you can head on over to the show notes, alldayruckoff.com/121. And I can't wait to talk to you next week. I've got an interview put together with Stoney and Chris, two GoRuck Selection finishers, about an event that they recently completed together. It was a team event, and it's a ton of fun. I'll be talking to you next week with that. And I'm excited about it. I hope you are too. Thank you again so much for all the support. And don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and drink hard, ruck harder.